Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas! Viva!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Katz with the Dish. This is John Katzlamitis. I write the Katz Report in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly, and I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group. And joining me, as is customary, is the beautiful and fragrant Tricia McCrone. Tricia?
I'm fragrant today. I love a good fragrant.
You smell of citrusy and flowers and honey.
I can do the Chanel number 5 ad that Marilyn Monroe does, where she's like, they asked me what I wear to bed, and I said, Chanel number 5.
Is that a Marilyn Monroe commercial?
Yeah, she does.
Chanel number five goes back that far?
Yes.
I didn't know
yes,
that.
Yes. It's a very old school perfume, and she gave the interview, and it's commercial, and she's like, well, I think they were expecting a nightgown or something like that, but I said, Chanel number 5 because it's the truth, and I didn't want to say naked. It's a very cute commercial.
And that is an actual ad?
Yes, it's a brilliant ad for Chanel number 5. And it just
so
happens that I, too, am only wearing Chanel number 5.
We can always hope.
And once a scarf, because it's
now we finally
chilly
verbalized
today.
A recurring dream I've been having since 2010.
Only since then? I'm kidding. So, yes, it's a blistery little day here in Vegas. The weather has turned on us finally.
It's Idaho-like Montanian.
Yes.
Around here, I got out of my car. I got in my car last night and drove, and I got out at a valet. It took me about 20 minutes. By the time I got out and I stepped out of the car, the temperature had dropped about 10 degrees.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It was right at nightfall.
Yeah.
And it's uncommonly uncommonly cold.
It's uncommonly cold, and I don't know if this is true, but I've been trying to get rid of, I've been dieting, basically, is the way to say it, like always. After I get over Montana, it's diet time. Mm-hmm. But I have to say that I went nuts at Thanksgiving because it's like my favorite meal, as it is most people. And so now we're the week after Thanksgiving. We had Black Friday. We had Cyber Monday. We had all the shopping chaos happening.
Right.
And I find that, I don't know if this is true, but I think because I ate leftovers and was eating like pie, like for dinner, you know, like after, like I was having so much food that I would normally not eat, that they say your stomach doesn't stretch, but I am so hungry all the time this
after
week.
After that.
Yes.
That happened.
Do you think there's any, because I really, I don't know if it's mental, but I'm starving all the time and I can go all day without being
hungry. I think once you condition yourself to start eating, I do believe it starts in Thanksgiving. And one thing I believe in this holiday stretch is that they always say you gain about 8 pounds, 8 to 10 pounds over the holidays.
Oh my God, I kill myself. Okay.
And I think that is true.
For a man, maybe, I hope.
I think it is true. But what I wound up doing, interestingly enough, on Thanksgiving, I had dinner at Origin India,
and this nothing was nothing speaks Thanksgiving Americana like
exactly.
Indian food.
I might as well have had sushi, but
exactly.
But it was a great meal over there, and it was just a random thing. Thanksgiving was sort of a random thing anyway, but I didn't overeat on Thanksgiving for the first time maybe ever, and I don't feel like I'm as hungry as I am the week after Thanksgiving as I normally
starving.
Am.
Yeah, but
so
I
don't know if you just
occurrence.
Get your eating momentum going or
I don't know, but today is the first day where I'm trying to nip it in the bud, so I'm kind of starving myself. And I'm like, and it's, as we're sitting here waiting to start recording, I'm like, okay, yes, that's my stomach growling. I'm like, it's like I'm trying to condition, like maybe just eat a little bit. Like I had cereal today, and that's it. Not that you need to know my eating habits, but it's now the afternoon, and I'm starving.
I need cereal.
Yes, like
or
I'm
oatmeal.
Starving. So.
What is your holiday sweetness weakness?
You know, I'm. It's not necessarily sweets. I absolutely love the Thanksgiving meal. I love the gravy and the mashed potatoes and the stuffing. Like, and I love all of that stuff and the pie, of course. Like, then you have to put ice cream and everything
else.
What
kind of pie are you talking about? Apple,
razzleberry is my favorite.
Razzleberry, holy cow!
Yeah, I threw that one out there. You weren't surprised at that.
That's a knuckleberry.
My sister actually got pumpkin because my brother-in-law loves pumpkin pie. She actually got pumpkin cheesecake.
So
why don't we just make it even more fattening than pumpkin pie could possibly ever be? But let's add a lot of cheese in the mix. So I was actually I had cheesecake like 3 days in a row, which you know me, Katz. I am like the type of person that's always on a diet. And I ate like I was going to the electric chair midnight up until like yesterday because we had so much leftovers.
The pumpkin cheesecake is a relatively new thing to me. I don't remember it being around when I was a kid. I don't know if that's a relatively new manifestation.
I'd never even heard of it, and the thought of it was disgusting until I took a bite of it, and it's like literally pumpkin pie and cheesecake put together in a yummy, fattening array of stuff. So anyway, so my Thanksgiving was wonderful, and it was here in Las Vegas. I've been going to Montana because I spent the last year in Montana. I We had it here in Vegas.
I'll tell you what happened on Thanksgiving, too. I went hiking. I went up to Red Rock.
And that's another. You really did have a normal.
You know what it was? And it was put to me by a lot of people who kind of pay attention to my schedule, if you can call it a schedule, is it was just like a day off. It was like a regular, what you would do on a day off. Thanksgiving turned into that. It wasn't like like a holiday, because I don't get many actual full days where I just don't work. And Thanksgiving was a day off. So you do what you normally do on a day off. You can go. Maybe you go for a hike. Maybe you watch a little football, which I did.
Well, not you.
You go to Origin India. And then afterward, we went over to see a show over at the Orleans at Brendan's Irish Pub, which is a Prince tribute act.
Which, hello, I would have lost my brain because, you know, he's my god.
And at some point, we'll have to catch up with this gentleman named Prince St. Paul. And Prince didn't know. I didn't make myself known. I wasn't in there reporting. It was just kind of
a lark. It's kind of funny, Minneapolis St. Paul, because, you know, he's from Minneapolis.
Minneapolis St. Paul, yes.
And that's where, yes, that's amazing. I love it. It's very clever.
And he plays an instrument that was popular in the mid-80s, as Lon Bronson told me last night. It was popular in the mid-80s for 2 months.
What is it?
Kitar. You remember the kitar?
Oh my gosh, I do!
This man is a virtuoso kitar player.
Wow.
And it was
okay,
on stage at
Brendan's.
When
does he perform?
His next gig is at Fiesta. I'll have to look it up and we'll have
mention
him. But have him on the radar. He plays the kitar. And
you just like saying it, keytar.
I like to say the keytar. It's a keyboard
and guitar
all in one manic instrument. And he was getting the keytar ready to play it during When Doves Cry. And he couldn't get it. He was having trouble with the sound setup because this was his first time performing at this venue. So it took him about 2 minutes to sort out the instrumentation and technical armament that is the keytar, all the setup, the pack and everything, the electric pack. But it was a unique experience. So that was Thanksgiving.
Well, okay. So now I had a normal Thanksgiving, but the Sunday before Thanksgiving and the Monday before Thanksgiving, I was in LA and I went to the American Music Awards.
Yes.
It was so much fun. I had the best time. I of course went with Wayne Newton and his gorgeous wife, Kathleen.
She's easy on the eyes, that one.
And who else was with us was Billy Ray Cyrus.
So here's the deal. I got to tell you, I was watching, I think it was Extra.
Yeah.
I was at the mechanic. And I was getting some tires put on my car, and I'm watching Extra, and there's Wayne, and there's Billy Ray Cyrus being interviewed, and I'm sitting there watching him, and it kind of flashed that Wayne might be involved in this, because it was from the American Music Awards, Academy of Country,
AMAs, yeah.
Sorry. And then they pan out, and there's Wayne standing next to him.
Yeah, it was very, very funny, because it just turned out that the way that it worked out, that we were together in the lobby, and we went over together, and we were going to be all sitting together, and Billy Ray wanted Wayne to walk the carpet with Wayne. So literally, most of the pictures are Wayne, Kathleen, and Wayne and Kathleen Newton and Billy Ray Cyrus. Like, it's like she's in the middle of the two of them. Uh-huh. So it was like and everywhere he went, he's like, no, I want to wait for Wayne. And literally, it was the cutest thing. Billy Ray Cyrus said to me, he said, you know, when I was first starting out, he goes, I used to come to Vegas and I used to stand in the back of Wayne's show because I wanted to learn how to be an entertainer. Mm-hmm. Singing's one thing, but having the connection with the audience and being a true entertainer, he's like, I would sit there and I would take notes and I would study him show after show. I would come to Vegas to watch him, to learn, you know, to kind of pick up some of the things that he does. Like, he was actually my mentor, and he goes, it was the most fun red carpet I've ever done in my life because I got to walk it with Wayne Newton.
Yeah.
Very cool.
True. We were talking about this the other day. It's irrelevant what the context was, but about how some performers, even some who are really, really talented, don't have the art of eye contact with the audience. Yeah. Wayne is the king of that.
You know,
I just remember the first time I saw him is like his eyes would work the room. You know, he could see him looking around the room, cutting through that distance and seeing people. Even if he wasn't looking at a specific person or at a person for a specific reason, he scanned the audience, and you were always sort of subconsciously waiting for him to come around and see you. And that's a different dimension of being.
Yeah, and it's,
you know?
so many people have said it. Yeah, Beverly D'Angelo in the interviews for Vegas Vacation, she has said it, and as of other people, that he gives you the feeling that he's singing to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and
right.
He he makes you feel that way, which is it's an art form that can't be taught. You either kind of, you know, but you can, but it's very neat that was something that Billy Ray Cyrus, like, he had this heart to heart with me and told me about. And then it turned out that Miley ended up with them on the red carpet, and that'll happen. And then the next day, we surprised Wayne's dance partner, Cheryl Burke, because she was in the finals of Dancing with the Stars. So that was so cute. We hadn't seen her for a while. So that was fun. And she made the finals, her and Jack Osborne. And so that was wonderful. And that was fun. And then, you know, so it was like kind of a crazy couple times. But after the break, I'm not going to give it away. Because who our guest is today is I'm the most excited about this interview that I have been in a very long time. It's someone I look up to. It's someone that I kind of idolize, I guess you could say, in so many ways. And so stay tuned, because I know we will.
Hi, this is Myron Martin from the Smith Center, and you're listening to Cats with the Dish.
You're going to be a good boy and take a dive like Petty said you would. I'm not going to have to teach you a lesson.
No, he's good. He's good.
You teach me a lesson?
I gave you a word.
Yeah. Teach you a lesson.
Everything's good.
Let me hear you say it.
Teach me a lesson.
That's Casey Affleck, Woody Harrelson, and Willem Dafoe in the new thriller Out of the Furnace. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. The first half of Out of the Furnace is a slow, ponderous character study of the troubled relationship between two working-class brothers, played by Affleck and Christian Bale. And it's only after about an hour that the central revenge storyline really comes into focus. The movie might have worked better as a scuzzy thriller, because director and co-writer Scott Cooper refuses to allow anything resembling fun or excitement into the story. Cooper seems to want to make a profound statement about the hollowness of revenge or the struggles of the working class, but the movie has only the illusion of depth. I give Out of the Furnace 2 stars out of 5. Also opening this week in limited release at the Regal Village Square is the documentary Betty Page Reveals All, which has one main thing going for it: an audio-only interview conducted with the reclusive pinup legend before her death in 2008, which director Mark Mori uses as narration for his otherwise sort of low-rent movie about Page's life. As a film, Betty Page Reveals All may be a bit lacking in sophistication and style, but as a historical document, it does exactly what its title promises. I give Betty Page Reveals All 3 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. This is Cats with the Dish. I am Tricia McCrone, and with me, as always, is my handsome co-host, Cats Report, and all of the things that I'm not going to list, John Katsimatidis. Hi, Catsy, again.
What's going on, beautiful?
Well, I'm really excited about our guest today because he's here to talk about a journey far to far, far, far away lands.
Yes.
That really do affect our economy and our lifestyle. Where he went is Macau. And that person here that I'm so excited to talk to is Johnny Katz. Oh my gosh, thanks for coming.
I understood all of that. I understood all of that except for the part where you introduced an adult toy. What was that all about? What is that? Get that thing away from me. Well, it's great to be back
Andy
in the
Moldy
studio.
Andy Moldy wearing Chanel number 5.
Chanel number 6 if Chanel
exactly.
number 5 doesn't work.
It's gone up. So Katz, the reason why we were, you know, we had all this to talk about before the break, the AMAs and Thanksgiving and all that kind of stuff, is because you went to Macau. And it was, I mean, a huge trip. And the reason why I'm saying it affects our economy is that Vegas has changed a great deal because of the influence that the casinos going into Macau and have happened as far as affecting everything with us with our economy. Now, I know Macau is keeping my stock in business. Because even when the American Stock Exchange, when all of our stocks go down, mm-hmm. for some reason, like they're like, oh yeah, the Dow and everything went down so far. But yet my LVS, Las Vegas Sands Corporation stock keeps rising and rising and rising. And you can kind of tell us about it. So first of all, tell us, Macau, besides you probably being the tallest man in the history of anyone that ever went there, tell us about it.
Well, your Las Vegas Sands is looking good. We stayed at the Venetian Macau, and as in part of the trip, when I was there, there was the announcement that David Beckham is going to enter into a business partnership with the Las Vegas Sands in Asia for some nightclub and retail opportunities.
So it means I shouldn't sell my stock yet because it's going to go up.
I would wait because David Beckham is an international superstar.
Yes,
and when he showed up,
not bad on eyes. Did you see him? Was he there?
Yeah, he was there. I did see him.
Was he in his underwear?
Well, I expect he was in his underwear, but he's wearing clothes up top of the underwear. I didn't think to ask him.
So, first of all, before we get into all the reasons why you went there, when you got there, and let's compare the Sands Macau compared, I mean, the Venetian Macau compared to the Venetian Vegas.
Well, right. We went there. Now, the reason I went there was to be part of the coverage of the Manny Pacquiao Brandon Rios welterweight
fight.
Which
was an amazing fight.
It was a great fight. Manny Pacquiao put the hurt on Brandon Rios, I'll tell you that. And Brandon Rios, I got to know a little bit on the flight back because he's on our flight.
Was he very bruised?
He was very beat up, but he's a good guy. And he fought as well as he could, but it was like I said, it was like being tied up with a Tasmanian devil. I mean, Pacquiao is a punching machine. And he's so quick and so strong and so fast and so smart and so relentless and so courageous and in great condition. I don't know, man. That guy is impressive. So that's why we were there. I went with a crew from it was set up by Top Rank Boxing, set up a media rate with the people at Venetian Macau, your company, Las Vegas Sands.
Yeah, I'm part owner of that.
And they extended an offer to some media members in the United States to go over there, and I'm tight with the Top Rank people here in Las Vegas, their PR team at Langdon Flynn, and also Bob Arum, who is the founder of Top Rank Boxing, and we have known each other for a period of time. I've covered some boxing. I went to Dallas a few years ago.
I remember that.
For this, to talk and the same type of stories that I was doing there, to go over there. So part of the coverage was the fight and the run up to the fight, and the other segment, the chief segment, is a series of stories that I've started as my blog, and then is going to be part of a publication that's coming out. That's going to be produced by the Las Vegas Sun late January, early February. I'm not sure when that is. And it's going to be a weekly news magazine coming out on Sundays that we're going to be producing. And this is going to be – this is one of a few stories that they're really fired up about that is going to help launch that publication. That's the story. Now, I go to Venetian when we land. And this is after about a 20-hour flying experience.
Hello Kitty pillows and Hello Kitty toilet Ava paper. Airlines. I saw your tweets.
Ava Airlines has a Hello Kitty carrier, a Hello Kitty themed.
Was there
a
Hello Kitty on the outside of the plane?
There was a Hello Kitty. Hello Kitty was painted on this plane. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I don't know how
so
confident
a Hello
I
Kitty
am.
Plane?
In that. Yeah. It's like
exactly
a giant
speak,
toy.
Like, yeah, like it doesn't exactly say this is the plane that's going to carry me across the globe.
It's like a Barbie
and,
plane.
Yeah, exactly.
A Tonka plane. I don't know.
It
Tickle
like
Me
you,
Elmo
yeah,
Airlines.
Like you might get like a makeover or something. In
you know,
the
it's,
flight,
it's funny because I was in coach. A lot of the guys, a lot of the folks from the Top Rank crew and a couple of the other journalists from the Yahoo, my friend Kevin Ioli, we're up in business. They put out the extra money to fly business class. And I've stayed in coach. But you know it's going to be a long flight when you sit down.
Steerage.
When you sit down and you see slippers offered in your in the compartment, you know. You can take your shoes off and put slippers on. And those are Hello Kitty also. So we go all the way over. That's the big chunk of the flight. It's a heck of a long flight, 15 hours from Los Angeles to Taipei, Taiwan. And then we flew from Taiwan into the Macau International Airport. And we were taken by shuttle. It was like, you know, they had us every step of the way. We went into a shuttle and went over to the Venetian. I get out, and the Venetian Macau looks just like the Venetian here. It looks a lot.
The tower, everything?
It's got the tower. It's got the same design effects.
The same part of Kasher?
It's got the same vibe. You know, it's a little bit different layout, but it's got the water out front, the gondoliers. It's got – so I'm thinking, oh.
The artwork in the lobby.
Exactly. You look up and it's painted very elegantly. The light fixtures are exquisite. Everything that the Venetian here offers is there. But as I would soon learn – The feeling you get when you walk into one of these places, and I'm in casinos a lot, the familiarity is erased when you see the human beings inside the resort. Everybody in there is from Hong Kong, or Macanese, or from mainland China. Everywhere.
Well, and I'm not being in the least bit racist here when I say this, but you're a very tall man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And on an average, I'm just saying not every Asian person, but on an average, most of the Chinese males and females are shorter.
It's and you
on
know what
average.
that is true. It's just your cultural makeup is a lot different, and it's very apparent in everybody's disposition that I am an interloper. I am from a completely different cultural environment, and the people who visit Macau are of that culture, and that culture loves to gamble.
Yes,
their theory is, as it was told to me, they gamble every day. They try to gamble every day or bake a bet or wager of some sort or play a game of chance because you might be walking around lucky and not know it, not realize it. So you have to do that. That's how it was said to me.
A lot of people feel that way here in the United States and when they work in Las Vegas and they find out they don't last here very long. Mostly they end up at 1-800-GAMBLERS.
Mostly you're unlucky.
but I have a question for you now. But which is what I'm sure that this theory is why, you know, the casinos here in Las Vegas, a lot of them have what they call feng shui. Mm-hmm. They like, you know, that the way that they are built and the decor and everything, the way that the certain, I mean, it gets very detailed that to attract the Asian gamblers mm-hmm. that you, I mm-hmm. mean, there are certain things that you don't have a certain door facing a certain direction for mm-hmm. the sun. I mean, it's very, I was around with someone when they got their place feng shuied, and it was like keeping a mirror under the bed to make sure that it reflects the negative energy. I mean, it's crazy. A certain wall had to be a certain color. The bed had to be facing that north, not something like that. So it's like, and we do cater to that.
We do
here in Las Vegas.
Here's what I, and if you take that feng shui concept and tenet and expand it to a place like the City of Dreams, which is owned by Crown Resort Company,
who we were talking about with former
Ross
guest of
Mollison.
Yes, because I've been to the Crown Casino in Australia.
Yeah, and he
in
set
Melbourne.
Me up through the people in Melbourne to the people in Ross did in Macau. So when I got there, there was this huge worldwide triangle of, and Ross was actually in Las Vegas at
That's
the time.
So funny.
So that was how this whole connection, and they could not, the people in Macau could not have been more welcoming. They were very, very nice. They were very appreciative of me being there. They understood what I was doing.
Do a lot of them speak English? Do they have to be bilingual, or
not
are there
necessarily.
Just a few of them that
this
speak English?
This leads me to my next point. Our culture here, our resort operators here, are far more conscious of the Asian and Chinese culture than is vice versa true. The reverse is not true over there.
Well, in other words, they're not really wanting to attract the American gambler like we are trying to attack the Asian gambler.
We are not on their radar as tourists. People from the West. They aren't looking for the family from Iowa.
Yes.
Right? They're looking – Macau exists as a holiday destination for people who live in mainland China and Hong Kong and that region, mm-hmm. Philippines and the underlying area. Totally true. It was specified by Mike Mecca, who used to be the president of Planet Hollywood. You know him.
Yes,
we know him. Used to work at Stations, was at Mandalay Bay
Until
for
you
a time.
Sent a picture to yeah. me. I didn't realize that he was over there.
So I got in contact with him before I went, and I said, guess who's coming to dinner? And he's like, no way. So I went and met with him. We spent an hour, or probably 90 minutes actually, over at Galaxy, where he works. And we were talking about this very thing. That he said that 75% of their customers are from mainland China. They have light rail that leads from the major cities in China to Macau. They're building a bridge from Hong Kong. Look out for this, folks. $9.5 billion, 26 miles, that will connect Hong Kong, 8 million people and change, to Macau. Now, when that happens, it'll cut the drive from Hong, it'll create a drive from Hong Kong to Macau, cut the transportation time from 3 hours on a ferry or a flight, that's rare in that region, to 45 minutes.
Wow.
And it's obviously worth it. If you think Macau's busy now, look out when they open up this bridge. So they understand what moving people around is all about. You know, they've got a high concentration of people who want to play there, and they're going out and getting them. And that's why Macau is starting to generate has generated so much in gambling revenue.
Now, as far as Vegas, Wynn has a presence there, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Wynn
and Encore,
we know
Twin
that
Towers, similar to here,
very mm-hmm. similar. And we also know, obviously, we're talking about that the Sheldon Adelson, Las Vegas Sands has they have a presence there. Are there any other? Does Caesars or does MGM have a
MGM
presence
Macau
there?
Is there? They are building a new hotel next year that's going to be about a little more than 1,000 rooms, I think. Right now, MGM Macau is more of a boutique-y 690-room hotel. Wynn is going to be building more another resort, 4,000-room, multi-billion-dollar resort on the Cotai Strip. I talk of the Cotai Strip as one area, and then you cross the bridges, and that's Macau and the peninsula. And
so
that's
is that kind of like downtown in the strip?
It's they're just different areas. They're right. They're still developed in similar patterns, but you are going to see the operators here in Las Vegas who have started in Las Vegas continue to develop there. Galaxy is doubling their footprint where Mike Mecca works. They're adding a Hyatt Regency there, incredible facilities. They're adding eventually an arena. Wynn is going to have a big arena in Macau.
And this is important. Are there Cirque shows there?
There was one Cirque show at the Venetian that closed after, I think it was less than 2 years. It closed in February of 2012.
Wow. So they Cirque does not have the foothold on Macau as it does here.
The Chinese, the people,
well, they have a lot of...
one thing I learned is that they're trying to develop some sort of an entertainment pattern there that appeals to people, to the folks who come over. The average stay of someone who visits Macau is less than 2 days. And they are allowed to spend a certain number of days per year, depending on their employment status and their classification with the government. The government controls a lot of this stuff. But when they go to Macau, when people who live in mainland China visit Macau, they're there for 2 days max, 1.5 days on average. 2 days is the max, and that's at Galaxy. Mecca told me, says they got a 2 day average at Galaxy. It's the highest in the region. When they go over, time is precious. And they like to gamble.
They don't want to waste the time.
They do not want to waste their time in a show unless they are really into that show. And they've got the Dancing Waters show over at the Crown Hotel at the
which Hard was when I it was Kerry Packer. Now I guess his son owns it.
Right.
He built it in Australia. Mm-hmm. And you actually did write about this, that the strange thing that my mom and I always laugh about this when we were in Australia, that it's a different thing casinos, because we like to play blackjack. As you know, I like to play blackjack, and you've mm-hmm. been with me many times. Mm-hmm. I have fun doing it. Well, at this case, it would be a lot of Asian gentlemen in their suits, and they would come. And usually you just wait for a seat to open. But the demand was so huge, because there were, at the time, Macau wasn't a presence. So people were going to Australia because it was closer. And you would actually, they would bet on, like, I would have a $25 chip, let's say, I'm putting it in dollars terms, and they would actually put money on top of mine, and I would be making all the decisions. Yeah, but it would make me nervous, because not only, I mean, I may make a decision, but I'm affecting this guy who has a lot more money down than I do. It's a very strange thing.
I asked about
this,
and I looked for it, and it's called back play. And what it is I never saw the example of back play that we've been led to believe about Macau, which is that the casino is so full of people that you can't find a seat, so you end up playing somebody else's hand. The Venetians, just as an example, Venetians' casino floor is 5 times larger than the Venetian here. Macau.
So they have a
huge sea of tables. But what will happen is the gravity of action around the casino will cause players to go to a table they think is hot, and they'll back play that table. There might be 4 back rack tables wide open with dealers ready.
But they feel that's
where you see
the
back play.
Oh, gotcha.
That's where I saw it. I observed this happening.
It's a strange thing to have it happen to you.
Yeah, if you're not used to it, it's unnerving. They're used to it. And it's an accepted thing. You back play everything. Skibo, craps. But I didn't see a period where the casinos that I was in were so busy that you had, and they never, it doesn't happen in high limit rooms either, by the way, in the really high limit rooms. It's only on the common floor. And that's what I observed. And the thing about Macau is it's built for its region. It's a regional phenomenon. And their outreach to the West is primarily for marketing purposes. The fight happened so they could get pay-per-view or a broadcast in mainland China to 200 million people to show people what Macau was really like. They did that through their Western connection, through Top Rank Boxing. And for the future, everything that they do is going to be all about marketing worldwide.
So you
appeal to the people
in
their area.
It's going to continue to grow, and it will continue to affect Las Vegas.
It will continue to strip Las Vegas, I feel, or make it more challenging for Las Vegas to draw
the much desired Asian gambler.
But Las Vegas still has a huge presence. The brand of Las Vegas is enormous.
The entertainment capital of the world. They can't even touch us there.
There are no shows like they have. Their lounge, forget the lounge acts. They have nothing like that. And the brand of Las Vegas is still very, very appealing to them. And you tell them you're from Las Vegas, and they get really, really excited. So it's just an interesting place.
Well, I'm glad you're back, number one. I missed you. And thank you for being such a wonderful guest today.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, come back next week. Stick around.